today I'm going to read chapter 25 of Duncan's War. So here I go. If Turner were still with Duncan and Jamie, he might have gone on to further their education about warfare. He might have told them how very often more men fell in the aftermath of a battle than in the pitched fighting itself. So it was at Lillian Green, those who fell in the battle were surprisingly few. But as the moon rose higher and the Covenanters fled into the hills, Dalil and his men scattered in pursuit, determined to wipe out as many of the rebels as possible. But the looming question in Duncan's mind was whether or not his father and Jamie's were still alive. As men ran past them in flight, they searched battle-weary faces. Most were too frantic in their eagerness as to be as far away from that place as they could get to notice the boys. But one of them suddenly stopped. "Jamie, lad!" he cried. "Father?" Jamie called hopefully into the darkness. "Father, is that ye?" "Aye, it is me, son." It is, Jamie, my son," said John Kilbride, embracing Jamie. "You're alive and unhurt, then?" asked Jamie, looking at his father's blood-striped face. "Only a wee bit saber scratch from one of Daniel's dragoons," he replied, touching his cheek. "Oh, but blessed be God Almighty, who's brought us together after such a rout." Here, John Kilbride noticed Duncan, still studying every face that flew past them. "I don't even care where your father is, Duncan," said John Kilbride, his hand on Duncan's shoulder. "The last I saw him, he was fighting as lustily as ever a man fought in just a cause. I can give ye the hope that I never saw him fall, but more than that, I can't me tell ye." "But Duncan," urged the man, "there's no time to lose. Dalio's horsemen will be on us any minute. You must flee with us for now." Pistol shots came from down the hill, lending more credence to Kilbride's words. "Ye can if it were Jamie in my place," said Duncan, anguish in his voice. "He'd not leave the field without ye. While there is any hope that my father might be alive, I must search for him. He might be lying somewhere down there, hurt but living. I can't leave him." "I can ye see it that way," said John Kilbride. An idea suddenly occurred to Duncan. "But ye'll fly on home to Darley, won't ye, and care for my mother and family while I search for my father? If he's hurt, it may be some time before I can get him back. If they've taken him prisoner, it may be take me a wee bit longer, but I'll bring him back. God helping me, I can find him and bring him back." John Kilbride looked closely at Duncan's eyes. He wasn't sure that Duncan fully understood what he was talking about. He even feared that Duncan might have gone a bit daft from the shock of the battle. The Covenanter prisoners only came out of the prisons for a short walk to the nearest gallows. But how could he urge the boy not to do all he could for his father? "You'll be careful, lad," said Jamie's father, after promising to take care of Duncan's family and his own. "God be with you, Duncan," said Jamie. "I'd say ye'd be best to skirt around the foot of that low hill to the south of the green," said Kilbride, said as they turned to go. "They'd not be expecting you to go there, but keep your head low and watch your back." Having no better plan, under cover of the night. Duncan made his way toward the foot of the low hill. It had the added advantage of giving him a position near the battlefield, and he knew he must begin his search there. He knew he had to know if his father had fallen and lay dead in the field. If he found his father there, his search would be over. Turner might have further instructed Duncan in other feature of war and battles. Small skirmishes can sometimes continue for hours, even days, after the pitched battle is ended. And in those skirmishes, the vanquished may prove more valiant than the victors. As Duncan scrambled across the snow, 100 yards southwest of the clustered battlefield, in the light of flare, he witnessed one such skirmish. Captain John Peyton, burly, keen-eyed hero of the Protestant cause in German wars, and veteran of Battle of Rochester, came face to face with fierce Dalio himself. "Halt, filthy traitor!" bellowed Dalio. "I've got you now," he barked in triumph. Duncan dropped in and lay still, not 20 yards away. To Dalio, with several redcoats at his side, and Captain Peyton. "You'll not find me so easy to kill," roared Peyton defiantly, "as ye found it to turn coat and fight against the cause of a Captain Coat." Both men drew their pistols. Crack! Duncan jumped as they fired at each other at point blank range. Dalio's shot missed Peyton altogether, but in the moonlight, Duncan watched Peyton's lead pistol ball hop down the front of Dalio's and land on his boots. Stunned but unhurt by the blow, Dalio struggled with the reloading of his pistol. "I smell the devil in ye, Dalio," yelled Peyton. He reached and reloaded one of his pistols, pointed it at Dalio, and fired. Dalio dodged to one side and lost his footing in the snow. Peyton's shot found its mark on a redcoat soldier next to Dalio. The soldier fell dead on the spot. "Seize him, you cowards," Dalio ordered his men. There was no time to reload. Peyton drew his claymore. It was 4-1. With a cry, the bold captain brought his claymore down on the skull of the closest advancing redcoat. The others halted. "I'll roast the man alive," screamed Dalio. "Peyton, I'll see you and all the Whigs exterminated. Now, men, seize him." "Take my compliments to your master," Matt Peyton called as he turned into the night. "And tell him I can't come to supper tonight." And with that, he disappeared into the night, leaving Dalio empty-handed, cursing and berating his soldiers. If only the whole battle could have gone like that, thought Duncan as he inched his way toward the battlefield, there would still be too many soldiers about. He dared not go any closer. He huddled in the cold snow, waiting for an opportunity to begin to grim search for his father. As the night wore on, Duncan heard fewer and fewer crisp pistol shots. Sometime after midnight, the dragoons halted their bloody hunting. At last of them rode into camp, and Dalio had established near the battlefield. Even the victorious English soldiers were tired and cold, thought Duncan, and not even they wanted to sort and bury their dead that night. Roll Weary Sentry was posted. Then a whooping, laughing of drunken soldiers celebrating victory rose mockingly from the camp. If he could only get to where they held the prisoners, he would rather search among the prisoners. It somehow seemed more hopeful. And the thought of tramping throughout the night over the bloody snow, searching for his father among those who died, sent a shiver of dread that racked Duncan's whole frame. Gradually, quiet descended over the camp, and with it, a grim, lonely silence hovered so thick over the battlefield, Duncan could almost feel it. Moonlight cast eerie shadows over the littered field. Duncan couldn't actually remember walking down to the battlefield. He just found himself in the midst of it all. Claymores and pistols, chafed nick pikes here and there, a musket, tattered rags of coats and blades, blankets and fleeces carried from bedding. Duncan shivered. A large warm fleece might not do much against the cause of that shivering. Nevertheless, he gathered one off and tied it into the bundle. And there were Bibles and Scottish psalters, most sodden now with snow, and some with blood. Duncan found a Bible and a psalter that were not yet ruined and tucked them on his plaid. As an afterthought, he snatched up a pistol and then another with a leather pouch of powder and ball. They might be useful to him somehow as he searched for his father. He walked on. Horses had died that day and lay on gross, thick heaps where they fell. The bodies lay strewn about the field, not as many as Duncan had feared, but bodies of men that had only hours ago lived and breathed and hoped. A few were redcoats, but most wore the rillian rag uniform of a fugitive covenanter. Duncan turned and trudged back up the hill. His stomach churned and he felt numb. How could war seem so glorious, even exciting, until you saw it like this at first hand? But an even more troubling question had been in the back of his mind for hours. What about the God of Jacob? What about him fighting for them? What they had just sung before the battle. Cause me escape and incline thy ear to me and me say. Had God not heard them? Was the cause of the covenant not a just one? Why had God abandoned them and him? He didn't know how long he marched that night, but while most of his comrades had fled north, Duncan dodgingly plodded north as in a dream toward Edinburgh. There had been no sign of his father among the dead. He had no idea if his father had been chased down and killed and lay dead somewhere on the lonely moorland. He clung to the hope that his father was among the prisoners. Surely he was. And the prisoners and the royalists would march to Edinburgh and trial. Duncan refused to think that what would follow those trials. He had to get to Edinburgh. From there, he might learn where his father was. And if he was alive, he could rescue him. So that was chapter 25. Bye, guys. See you later. See you later. See you later. See ya. See ya later. Bye, guys.